Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Alma, Michigan, and he began selling Ramblers in 1962. From 1968 to 2002, he owned various General Motors dealerships. Since 1994, he's owned the Dunmaglas Golf Course. On July 9, 2006, his 26-year-old daughter, Kaylee, was left paralyzed from the neck down in a diving accident. Today, Kaylee's cure for paralysis has raised over $3 million for a cure for paralysis. His name, Mike Pung. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're with Mike Pung, who's a lot of things, one of which is a serial entrepreneur. Mike, welcome, an honor to have you.
Thank you very much.
You grew up in Alma, Michigan. Still live in Alma, Michigan. Where is Alma, Michigan?
Right in it's the middle of the mitten, St. Louis, 3 miles away. It's geographically the center of the Lower Peninsula.
And it's the home of the mobile home.
That's exactly right. Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball came to Alma, I don't remember exactly, I was a kid, I think 1954, when they made the movie The Long, Long Trailer, and New Moon Homes, that later became Redmond Industries, built it.
We're talking to Mike Pung. He was the Google before there was a Google. So, okay, let's go back. You're one of seven kids, no money. Talk about your mom and dad and growing up in Alma, Michigan.
Well, I say to people that say, hey, did you inherit money? No, I think I inherited the right way to go about things and to work. My dad and I'd sit on the porch on Sunday afternoon. He'd have a beer. He'd hand me a shot glass, fill it with beer, and he'd say, here, drink like a man. So I never wanted to drink when I was in college because I didn't like it.
What's the biggest thing you learned from Dad, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
From Dad, I learned to work. From Mom, I learned every day, because with seven kids, trust me, she had a load of us behaving. And so I learned you better do things the right way.
Okay. Dad was a car dealer.
Yes.
Selling something called a Nash.
Correct.
And went broke eventually.
Yes.
What were Nashes?
Well, they were what later became the American Motors out of Kenosha, Wisconsin, and George Romney was the head of it, who then became the governor of Michigan.
And then Commerce Secretary or something, I think.
Yeah, I forgot about that part.
All right. 1962, you're 21 years old, and you start selling something called Ramblers.
Right.
What were Ramblers?
Well, that was the American Motors car, just Ramblers. They made Nashes, and then they made a smaller car, and it was called a Rambler.
And what was your pitch?
That they were a good car.
So, okay, 1965, Mike. You get a used car lot.
Yes.
You became a used car salesman. How and why?
Because I wanted to be in business for myself. And actually, to give you a little background more of it, I had gone around to two or three dealers in the area and asked for a job selling cars. And they had reminded me that my dad had gone broke doing it. And so I left and said to myself, I'll bankrupt you, jokingly, but I was going to show them that I'd be better at the car business than they were.
All right. You get a lot, an empty lot. Then you got to buy some. You got to buy these cars. Where did you ever get the money to get an inventory of cars?
Well, in the beginning for the used car lot, I went to a couple of banks. I didn't have any money, and they turned me down, so I went to the local finance company, but it was out of Saginaw, and I told the guy that I wanted to borrow a few thousand dollars to buy used cars, and I said, the banks charged too much interest. They said yes. They had said no. And I got the loan from him to start to buy the used cars.
Okay, back in the day, the model of a used car salesman was not that good. Were you one of the few honest ones?
I think so. I'm the guy that got John Engler to put everybody that sells their car today and has for the last 30-some years has to sign a mileage affidavit, and it's written on the title. And I got Engler to get that law passed because I was sick of competitors setting back the odometers, and it was an epidemic.
Mm-hmm. All right. In 1968... you take 101 trips, Mike Pung, to see a man named Russ Fredrickson, who was a Cadillac dealer in Alma. 101 times you went to see him. What did you ask him?
Well, I was trying to buy his dealership. He was a very nice guy, a very smart guy. He'd been a captain in World War II. But he drank all day long, and so sometimes he didn't always want to do the same thing the next day. And so it took me that many times to convince him that I could buy his dealership because, in fact, he died 3 months after I bought it. So he knew that he ought to be selling out.
All right, you were 26 at the time. You have a Cadillac dealership. What did you pay for it?
Well, I don't even know that in today's dollars it would be a lot different than then. The Consumer Price Index started June 1st of 1967, so I don't know, are we at 500% or something? So with, you don't include inventory because the inventory you floor plan. So it was probably $150,000 or something.
We're talking to Mike Pung. Quite a story. Eventually, he owned Pontiac, Cadillac, GMC, Olds dealerships in Alma, and a Chevy dealership in Mount Pleasant.
Yes.
And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula. We're with Mike Pung. From 1968 to 2002, he owned various General Motors dealerships, Pontiac, Cadillac, GMC, Olds in Alma, and Chevy in Mount Pleasant. Let's talk about auto dealers. They have huge hearts, Mike. And they all seem to have a culture of giving back to their local communities. Why so?
Well, maybe because after in World War II, they stopped building cars. So cars immediately after the war were so hard to get. And so they would take the best bid they could get. So people, I think, thought that was being crooked when you got bids. Or, oh, I thought I was going to buy the car for $400 and the next guy offered $450 and you didn't get it. So I think that culture might have been, hey, we better be more honest because everybody thinks we're crooks. And so that probably, I mean, I wouldn't be the expert at it, but I certainly have that opinion. And I never had problems dealing with the other dealers. It would be a phone call and you get a dealer trade or you sell them a used car or whatever. And I thought they were the best bunch I ever dealt with businesses wise. And like you said about giving, I think we had three or four a day that would come in asking for something. The whole county would, the schools for everything they wanted, but that's what you did. You helped the community. And especially when you're in a little town, I never bought anything out of town that I could buy in Alma, Mount Pleasant, or Charlevoix.
You employed a lot of car dealers, a lot of car salesmen through the years. What did the best ones have in common other than selling a lot of cars?
I think the best ones were the honest ones because I'd have to fire some that were the type that people would think that they'd tell somebody something, and that didn't work with me. I would run ads and tell people about down the street you can get a car and they set the odometer back or something, and we're not going to do that. We're not going to tell somebody that something that isn't true. And in the service department, I would always, when somebody'd come in and they'd get a new battery, I wouldn't let our guys dispose of it, or starter or generator or whatever, because I'd have a joke, we have a discount on comebacks. If we do it right or wrong, guess what? We still got the part to put on. We'll put the right one on this time and not charge them.
God has blessed you, Mike, in many ways. One of the biggest was a lady named Alice that you married at age 36. Some referred to her as a saint. Talk about Alice.
Alice is a saint. My daughter, I never got married till I was 36. I was too busy working. And anyway, Alice was 29. Well, we have two kids, Kaylee and Mike. And then, like you said, Kaylee broke her neck in a diving accident July 9 of 06. And that has changed everything. And for me, I still run different businesses, okay? So I have people on me all day or distractions. Alice has to be with Kaylee constantly. Kaylee, I think, is a saint, but so is Alice for taking care of her and giving up her life. But with Kaylee, that's not as hard to do as one might think, because I don't know how you can lay motionless. Most of those people die. The ones that live are brain dead. Her brain is fine. From bed, she's raised $3 million to give away for paralyzed research and for paralyzed veterans. And so when you watch her smile, it's very inspirational, and it's hard to give up, because if she's not, people complain about a toenail bothering them. I got news. If you can't breathe, swallow, move a muscle, it's a little bit on the tough side when you lay 18 and a half years without moving.
Kaylee was born 1980. She went to Alma College. She got a BA in business. And then she went to work in 2002 for the Allegis Group, a staffing firm. Tell us about Kaylee in early 2006.
Well, when Kaylee worked for Allegis, which was a great company, anyway, we have a home in Charlevoix, and we'd be in Charlevoix in the summer, and it would be Thursday afternoon, and Kaylee walks in and says, "Wait a minute, aren't you working?" "Yeah, well, the boss kicked me out." Well, a week or two later, she's up there again, and so then I met the boss, and I said, "Well, how is she getting here?" He said, "Kaylee did a year's work in 5.5 months, so we tell her to leave."
We're talking to Mike Pung. When we come back, we're going to ask him about July 9th, 2006. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Mike Pung. Mike, your daughter Kaylee, July 9th, 2006, Kaylee and three girls are in a pontoon boat in Pontiac Lake. What happens?
It was going to be the last dive of the day, because it was like 5 o'clock or something, and it was the last dive. The boat had shifted and there was only 25 inches of water. She dived in the lake, hit her head, and that's what happened. So anyway, one of the girls jumped in, held her out of the water. They thought she was gone. There were two RNs on the next boat, and one of them came over, started doing CPR. They called and the fireman came with a plastic stretcher to get her out of the water. They took her ashore, and two little girl paramedics were there to take her to the hospital. They, I understand, passed three hospitals and went to Beaumont, because they knew she was so bad that she needed to go where that's where the big experts are, and that's what they did. There were two other kids broke their neck in Pontiac Lake that day. We didn't know either of them. One was a freshman boy from the University of Michigan, and he died. The other one was a girl that we heard was in another hospital.
Mike, Kaylee's broke her C1 and C2 spinal fractures.
Yes.
Okay. 18 and a half years ago. Paralysis from the neck down. Nobody survives this. And there's an angel that was at Beaumont named Dr. Jancic.
That's for sure. I say many times, Kaylee's the unluckiest person in the world, but she's been very lucky meeting some geniuses and some great people to take care of her. This guy, Jancic, his job was to take over when others give up. He and a guy named Dr. Flowers, and I think they were in charge of everybody then at trauma. And so we were so fortunate that he was there and that she lived, because those kind of injuries just don't make it. And she didn't even get pneumonia after being in the bottom of the lake.
So when it happened, how did you and Ellis react to it?
Well, I was in Charlevoix on my bulldozer trying to make a new tee for another golf course for Dunmaglass, the second one. My wife was at her brother Tom's in Traverse City. Mike was at the campus at Northwestern. He had graduated Notre Dame the year before, wanted to work a year, and was thinking about going to law school and do something else. So we all heard in three different spots and converged on Detroit from three different places.
All right. Soon thereafter, all of you guys start Kaylee's Cure for Paralysis. Kaylee's, K-A-L-I-S, cure.org. Tell us about it.
It was first, the Allegis group threw a golf outing for the first year because they wanted to donate things, not for Kaylee, but for other people. None of the money from Kaylee's Cure ever, not a dime, has ever gone for Kaylee. Her overhead runs anywhere from 1.5% to 3%. Most of these organizations, a lot of people are getting paid. Nobody's getting paid. Well, I guess I get to do that. But anyway, the net result is she then decided she wanted to start one. And so it was kind of interesting because a local lawyer did the work for us, but it was back when there was a problem with the IRS and people having a hard time getting 501(c)(3), whatever. And so I didn't know anything about it, but I get a letter from this guy in Cleveland. And so I call him on, or Cincinnati maybe, I call on the phone, got him on the phone, and he said, well, she wants to help people that are in trouble, that are, you know, paralyzed and that don't have money. He told me if they don't have money, you have to prove the poverty lesson or level. So he said, I don't think you want that. The guy walked me right through it. In 90 days, she had this 501(c)(3) with the great help of him. She then picked her own board. I'm not on it. And that's a good thing because I do the errands and the running and all that kind of stuff. She knows how to do it. Her board members are great. They know what they're doing. I've never even been to a board meeting. That way, I think it stays pure.
God brought another angel, the late, great Frank Beckman. Talk about his involvement.
Well, Jim Anderson, Urban Science, is a great guy that's helped so many people. Found out about Kaylee and then got her down here, and we... that's when we met Frank Beckman. She got a big award, and Frank was the one. She and Mike, her brother, were on the stage with Frank. He presented it. Then he became a friend until he died, and he emceed Kaylee's Cure at Dunmaglass in Charlevoix every year. And he was just great. He and Karen would come and stay with us, and so we became very good friends. He would talk about her on the air. And that was good. And then Huge, the Bill Simonson, the sports show in Grand Rapids, found out, and he talks about Kaylee all the time.
The mission of Kaylee's Cure is to assist in the financial support of spinal cord research and ultimately the cure for paralysis, while simultaneously helping individuals who are afflicted with the disability. So 18 and a half years later, it's raised $3 million, Mr. Pung. How?
Well, we had a golf outing every year until COVID, and then we would have silent auctions, and then the big auctions, and people were so generous and donating the money. And so that's really helped. And that's where it came from. When COVID came, then we weren't able to have the golf outing, but we did have a party at our house every year, and we've been able to maintain that. Then Kaylee's mother was sick, and then the lady that helped the most, Ann, died. So getting the gifts and having the auctions has been almost impossible. We hope we can get back to that. But she still, through the generosity of so many nice people, have been able to still raise a whole bunch of money.
If you want to learn more, www.kaliescure.org. All right, let's talk about another angel. Out of Cleveland, Case Western Reserve University, Dr. Raymond Anders. Mike, tell us about him.
He, first of all, we met him once when we were out at Craig Rehab in Denver. We were there for 5 months, and he came out. He's the genius that invented what you call the diaphragmatic pacer. At that time, the first person to have it was March of 2000. Christopher Reeve's Superman was the second person. Kaylee was the 33rd person, and it was experimental medicine at that time. So anyway, we went to Cleveland to get it, and we had invited a doctor from out by Swedish hospitals hooked on to Craig in Denver, and they were having a hard time deciding which one should learn to do the surgery. So her infectious disease doctor was a lady. I'm telling her about it. She said, my husband's a laparoscopic surgeon, and she said, came back the next day, and I said, well, I'll invite him to Cleveland. She said he'd love to come. So he came to Cleveland, and we brought a nurse from Craig also. And, of course, we're scared to death. Another surgery, she's not supposed to make it. So the doctor and the nurse came out, and she's fine. I said, well, great. Can you do the surgery now? He said, yes, I can, and now I know why the man said he could teach us over the phone. He said the man could have learned over the phone. He's talking about Dr. Anders. He said, I never knew a human being knew every cell in the body until today. That's a laparoscopic surgeon with a wife that's a specialist. I think he was blown away.
Kaylee's Cure has given that Dr. Anders $1.3 million. Also, she's given away to paralyzed vets and research. She's raised $3 million
right,
while being paralyzed for the last 18 and a half years.
The money that she's given for Dr. Anders, it's when you do medicine or a medical device in the United States, first of all, I knew nothing of this, okay? You can't sell it to children if you can't prove the efficacy of staying in business. So he didn't have the money so that he could do children. Her first $300,000 allowed him to do a 10-month-old. 4 or 5 years ago, he did a 10-day-old one. But the money he spends is 1 or 2 weeks a month for years. He's gone around the world teaching other people this surgery so that they can have a diaphragmatic pacer because no one ever had even heard of it.
We're talking to Mike Pung. If you want to learn more, www.kaliescure.org. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble.
The great Ernie Harwell.
My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God.
And the voices of our generation.
I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis.
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom,
The Little Liar. It's really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohom. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Mike Pung. In the last segment, Mike, you were talking about an angel, Dr. Ray Unders.
Yes.
Continue.
Yes. He's a biomedical engineering professor and an MD surgeon at the university hospitals. But for people listening, he invented the diaphragmatic pacer with the idea of replacing vents in hospitals. But the impetus of it was people get Lou Gehrig's disease. They lose the contraction ability of the muscles in the diaphragm. So he implants, I think it was four wires, two to each diaphragm, and then a ground wire, and then this computer thing that he has, and he makes you breathe with your diaphragms, because if you breathe on a ventilator, it's like blowing up balloons. After a while, you blow up the alveoli in the lungs, and pretty soon you get pneumonia. So she'd have never lasted 18 and a half years if she was on a vent all day. She's on the diaphragmatic pacer, which is an absolute miracle, and it can be. And so if anybody out there knows somebody that needs it, look up Cayley's Cure or University Hospitals in Cleveland, and you can find out about the pacer, because it's an absolute miracle. And then we have another angels. In Alma, we have an order of nuns, and some of them are doctors. So Dr. Firestone was a friend, and I met him and helped him the first day they came in 1973. So they just took over and taught us how to take care of Cayley at home. Otherwise, when they put these people like Cayley get put in a home. We have, Dr. Firestone told me I needed to have somebody in the room all the time. So we started a 40-second rule. If somebody leaves the room, someone else needs to be there in 40 seconds. If the vent quits, or the pacer, which never quits, by the way, then you have to be there, because people don't understand how bad it is to be a quadriplegic. You can't push a button. You can't scream. You can't do a thing. So if you have a problem, you're at the mercy of somebody, and they need to be there. So the sisters in Alma have been a great help. They still come to the house and see Cayley all the time. And we have an angel in Alma, Dr. Smith, that comes all the time and helps. So as unfortunate as she is, she's been very fortunate about getting care. There was another angel, Dr. McDonald, and he died from John Hopkins. He was the genius that invented electrical stimulation for wounds.
All right. He's passed 18 and a half years, Mike. What's the biggest thing Cayley has taught you and Alice?
Well, she should teach the world to quit griping, because nobody has a problem compared to what that is. That's the biggest thing. Courage and faith in God. And, hey, I can do this regardless. It's impossible, but I'm doing it. With a smile.
You're not mad at God. Why not?
God didn't dive in the lake. I think God gives us a free will, and we use it, and there are accidents, and there are problems that people cause, and I don't think God gets involved in everyday's activity. He may be watching it and giving us some guidance, but God isn't doing a daily activity for us. That's why we have a free will and a conscience.
All right. If there's a family tonight listening who's just experienced a horrific accident with a child, what do you say to that family?
Don't give up. You will see them in heaven, even if it turns out to be the worst. But get some help and stick with it. And if that child can do what Kaylee does, then don't complain about having a sore arm or having to scrape the windshield in the winter or in your car.
Okay. At the start of the show, I said you are a quintessential entrepreneur, a serial entrepreneur. You own a golf course in Charlevoix by the name of Dunmaglass. Talk about running a golf course up north.
Well, I think I set the record for having the worst marketed business in Michigan, because after Kaylee got hurt, I don't really run it. I'm not there. I own it. And I have 900 acres. God made the land. It's not my fault that it's that beautiful. But we have spots 360 feet above the water, and you can see all the way to Beaver Island. You see, say, Lake Charlevoix. I bought the 900 acres to develop and build homes. I like building things. I have bulldozers, loaders, and all that kind of stuff. And so I've been building buildings my whole life. When I was a car dealer, I was also a contractor. I've built like 250 or 300,000 square feet of buildings and homes. So that's what I like to do, and that's what I wanted to do. Well, when Kaylee got hurt, we take care of her and Elma, and we're not in Charlevoix like I should be. That's why I said I don't do a very good job of marketing, and I haven't gotten my second golf course built.
It's early.
Yeah, it's early. Okay. I'm only 83.
We're talking to Mike Pung. He also owns a hotel and a restaurant in Elma. You, Mike, have a can-do attitude. How do I get a can-do attitude?
Well, first I have to take the derogatory part of that. Maybe you shouldn't, because I've had a lot of those projects that didn't make it. So maybe always thinking you can isn't the right thing. Actually, I'm not sure. Don't lose your confidence to anyone. It's Elma has not grown. We've lost too many good jobs. It's not the fault of Elma. The mobile homes were built there. Well, the mobile homes grew so big that you can't go east in Michigan, you can't go west and north, there isn't anybody. So the manufacturing all left, and then we lost some other good plants, and that doesn't help the economy.
Okay. You went to see a man 101 times to ask him to sell his Cadillac dealership to you. There's a saying, I heard this from Zig Ziglar once, that 2% of the people quit after they hear the word no 5 times. 2% of the people quit after they hear the word no once. 95% of us quit, Mike, even before we ever hear the word no. We don't even begin. That leaves 1%, the crazy one that goes 101 times. Talk about the fortitude and the never giving up.
Well, I think some people might say I'm crazy, and that might also be something that got passed down to Kaylee. You don't quit, period. And that's what you do. And so I wanted it. I wanted to prove I could get it. And so I kept going, and then I ran into the nicest man that I had ever met that loaned me the money to buy it back then. And my CPA was his CPA. And so anyway, I go out to see the guy, and I said I needed to borrow $80,000. And I told him I'd furnish him a Cadillac and I'd give him 7% interest. That was about 10 minutes to 12 or whatever, and I left at 12:30, went and got something to eat, went back to my little used car lot with a 12x12 office. His car was sitting in the parking lot. And I said, what's this? He got out of the car and he said, oh, Mike, I put the money in your account. He said, Neil Weathers will draw up the papers. That was the guy that when Jerry Ford was president, Neil Weathers was one of the lawyers in Grand Rapids. I think it was Buchan Law Weathers or something. And so I didn't even sign a contract for 2 or 3 weeks after I had the money. But that's how things were when I had the used car lot. I never took the keys out of the car. You didn't think about people coming and stealing your car. Life wasn't the same then, and people knew. They believed in God, and they believed in right and wrong. Somewhere along the line, that's been forgotten.
All right. You're a serial entrepreneur. Talk about entrepreneurs.
Well, I think I'm a failure, if you want the truth. I may be an entrepreneur, but, you know, look at people that make billions. That's certainly not me. So I don't want to brag about anything. Yeah, I think that I know how to work and that I could see things. I think also, never confuse brains and luck is what I learned from a good guy named Jim Lockwood years ago when he'd tell me about people. Hey, they may not be that smart, but they're lucky. And some people are very smart and lucky, and some people aren't very lucky.
Well, I've heard it said that success is a journey, not a destination, and all entrepreneurs believe that and live that. Success is a journey, not a destination. And the real joy in life, Mike, is the journey. Okay, we met through a man named Jim Fabiano Sr., affectionately known as the Rascal. A fabulous human being. Tell us about the Rascal.
Well, the Rascal, I became friends with him first. It was his dad and his uncle, and they started Fabiano Distributing in Mount Pleasant. I sold them the year I got the dealership, I sold them new Cadillacs. And so then I met Jim, and he and Lee's nice wife became friends then, and we all ran around together, and they bought cars from my dealerships for years, and we've been friends, I guess it's over 50 years. Yeah, it's well over 50.
Now he's got a couple of sons in it, now a couple of grandkids in it. It's now in the fourth generation. And they basically supply all of the liquor from Gaylord to below Detroit. Phenomenally successful, huge heart, great, great human being.
They know what they're doing. They've done a wonderful job. And like you said, they're all about giving. In fact, I don't even remember how it came about, but Mike was graduating high school and thinking of going to Northwestern because he had been in some gifted children's program at Northwestern when he was a little kid. And so then Jim said, Mike, you need to take him to a Notre Dame football game. So he gave me the tickets. I took Mike to the football game. That's all she wrote. Isn't that what they say? He went to Notre Dame.
And he became a Domer.
Yes.
So, all right, as our time winds down together tonight, Mike, what advice do you give to our young listeners?
Well, first I'd say I wished I could be 18 again so I knew everything. So take that to heart. And I'd like to say a couple things then. Winston Churchill said, if you're not a liberal at 18, you don't have a heart. If you're not a conservative at 38, you don't have a head.
Mike Punk. Mike, thank you.
Thank you.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.